This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann this hour. It sounds like an oxymoron. Urban suburbans. They are urban suburbs. The move to make suburbs, or at least parts of suburbs, look more like city neighborhoods. In the 1960s and 70s, people fled cities for the suburbs. They fled places like the Short North and Victorian Village to live in Upper Arlington and Worthington and Dublin. They wanted bigger homes, bigger yards, quieter streets, lower density. Now, 40 years later, as neighborhoods like the Short North and like Victorian Village have come back, the suburbs would like some of that urban feel to complement their subdivisions. This hour, we talk about this, quote, new urbanism, not only in the suburbs, but in the cities as well, because places like Columbus are trying to revitalize portions of their city that have fallen into disrepair or fallen on hard times recently. So our guest this hour is Carol Coletta. She is president and CEO of CEO for Cities and host of the syndicated public radio show Smart City. Carol, thanks very much for joining us.
Delighted to be here.
We'll talk about new urbanism during this hour. You're welcome to join our conversation. Our phone number is 292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Carol, could you define new urbanism?
Well, I think new urbanism really is just good old urbanism. There are things we've known about cities and the way they work and the way they work best for people for many years, and we really fell away from that for the last 50, 60 years for good reasons. America was growing very quickly. The automobile made it possible for us to travel longer distances on a daily basis. Our new affluence allowed us to live differently. And the country certainly was in need of some renewal. So I think that we have, you know, we've built cities a little bit differently over the last 50 years. But now we're at an inflection point where that is changing, and we're sort of relearning the lessons of the past.
Is this a temporary thing, or is this a permanent thing?
You know, I very much think it's a permanent thing, and, you know, what is permanence today? But if you look at where our opportunities lie, I mean, we all know that gas inevitably, you know, foreign oil is going to increase in price. We know that we have climate issues. We know that we have obesity issues. We know that we have time issues. We're all constrained by time. We have too much congestion, and we all hate it. So I think all of those things are conspiring to lead us toward a new kind of convenient lifestyle that is going to cause us to want to live in ways that, again, we've sort of put aside for the last 50 years, and that is, you know, in a more compact, a mixed-use way, a way that doesn't make us depend on the automobile for every single trip, in a way that provides or affords us a healthier lifestyle on a daily basis. I mean, it's so funny. Think about the fact that you have to think about going out to walk or run to, you know, to exercise when, you know, people who live in more compact ways that don't depend on the automobile for every trip do that naturally. That's just part of how they get around. So I think these changes are clearly part of a longer trend. If you look at Urban Land Institute and the best minds in real estate are saying the same thing. So this is no longer wishful thinking by a few urban planners. The market is really beginning to reflect the fact that these are changes that people want.
Where is this happening now? Which you know, first tier suburbs or suburbs have succeeded in creating this new urban space?
Well, I think you're seeing the future scattered all over the country. It's taking place in so many communities, but I don't think that there's any one community that I would point to that has it, you know, has put all the pieces together and really married the development of the last 50 years with, you know, with what people are wanting today in a really holistic way. Mm-hmm. So I think there's huge opportunity for the community that gets it right first.
292-8513 if you'd like to join in our conversation. We're speaking with Carol Coletta. She is president and CEO of CEO for Cities and also host of the public radio show Smart City. We're talking about new urbanism, the trying to bring lower density, higher density housing and retail into suburbs. Suburbs, they're, Edward Scissorhands, the movie, and the Brady Bunch, those were that's the cliche, the sort of cookie cutter subdivisions with strip malls, and that's what we've grown to know as suburbs. But they're trying to go back old school, to create a town center, even if they didn't even have a town center.
That's right. I mean, that's exactly what you're beginning to see. And certainly much of America looks just as you described. There are also some sort of wonderful first-tier suburbs. I mean, I live in Chicago now, and, I think about the fabulous suburban towns that were built around the transit center, the train, the metro line. So but people there did not have to depend on cars every day. They depended on the train, and so you didn't have sort of all those gaps that you get when you have to park a car, every block for every trip you make. And so, there are wonderful examples of communities that got it right and are suburban communities. And I think that the challenge now is to really think about how to preserve what is really wonderful about a place like Dublin, which has been very financially successful and provides a high quality of life, clearly. But thinking about how the market is changing and how Dublin and other places like it need to remake themselves to meet these new market needs.
I was speaking with the city manager of Dublin this morning, Terry Fogler, and he was mentioning how the market has changed in that the people who are selling their homes now are more and more older folks, and they're looking to get out of the bigger homes with the big lots that they have to mow every week and things like that.
And what a shame if they have to leave their communities that they're committed to, that they're civically engaged in, that they've invested in for all these years. I mean, if they have to leave those communities because only one lot size is available, only one home style is available. I mean, no one, when their kids go off and, if they've got the four or five bedrooms and the multiple baths, I mean, who wants to, who wants to heat and cool it, much less clean it? Mm-hmm. And then, it's not exactly the lock and leave lifestyle if they begin to travel and want to be able to quickly, go see the grandkids and lock up and make sure their belongings are safe. I mean, you don't necessarily feel as safe. The lifestyle is not the kind of house and lot is not conducive to that sort of lifestyle. And so, wouldn't it be better if they could stay in Dublin, keep their keep the tax dollars and the civic energy there, but also have that ability to live in a different kind of home as they age.
For those who aren't familiar with what Dublin is doing, they are studying what they call the Bridge Street Corridor, and we'll speak with a planner, a consulting planner, later in this hour. But they're basically trying to – the historic part of Dublin where Bridge Street and High Street meet on 161 there right over the river, they've built some new buildings that look old with nice sidings and stone facades and things like that. And they're also looking at redeveloping some – old, tired, largely vacant shopping centers up by Sawmill Road to make it sort of Dublin's main street, which we associate with older cities. So that's what they're doing there. Is that the suburb of the future, closer into the city, Carol?
Well, I think that certainly people are going to look to have more convenience and more options at their fingertips, more options more conveniently. So I think these first-tier suburbs are really interesting places, particularly those that start with as many assets as Dublin. But America is full of these first-ring suburbs that are some of which are in decline. That's a new phenomenon for many of these communities. I mean, people in the 50s and 60s moved to the suburbs to get away from urban decline. Well, human beings tend to bring their problems with them. And, so ultimately things get old and things get disinvested and people want something different. And so these suburbs, like cities before them, begin to decline. The question is, how do we anticipate that cycle of decline and stop it mm-hmm. by adapting the place we have to new market needs? And exactly what they're trying to do.
What has happened is that you're in a first-tier suburb and the neighborhood gets older and new trends in housing develop with great
That's
rooms
right.
and three-car
That's
garages.
Right.
So people were moving out.
That's
here
right.
in central Ohio, they would move to southern Delaware County from,
yeah.
say, upper Arlington. Is that gone? Is that sprawl, the spreading sprawl, is that gone?
Well, I think it's not gone for good, but I'll tell you what is interesting. We've done two studies over the last year that show two interesting things. One, the most recent one called Walking the Walk, which you can find at ceosforcities.org, shows that a residential property that has a higher walk score, in other words, is closer and more convenient to more things to do, has a higher value than the exact same home in a different neighborhood that is not as walkable. So one thing we're seeing is that the market is now valuing places that have higher walkability than those that don't. The other thing we found in another study called Driven to the Brink is that cities that have very strong cores are holding their value better through the real estate value better throughout the metropolitan region than those with weak cores. So I think, again, both of those are not our forecast, or it's not hopeful urban planners. That's what the market is telling us. So I think that there is there's a lot of opportunity here to learn these lessons and adapt quickly to what they're telling us.
292-8513, if you'd like to join our conversation with Carol Coletta here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. My name is Mike Thompson. I'm sitting in for Ann this morning. We'll talk more about this walk score. It's a really cool website. You can get the walk score for your house. We'll talk more about that and more about this thing called new urbanism, the urbanization of cookie-cutter suburbs, when All Sides continues on WOSU.
Good morning. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. Corporate partners help provide support for WOSU 820. Your business can join them and reach an educated, engaged, appreciative audience every day. Be associated with a trusted local and national source for accurate news coverage. For more information, contact Christine at 247-4469. And thank you for supporting WOSU 820 NPR News. Currently 51 degrees in downtown Columbus under cloudy skies. More clouds later this afternoon and rain is likely, a high of 58. Rain showers tonight with a low of 45. Cloudy skies for Thursday with a chance of rain on Thursday as well, a high of 55 degrees. The low Thursday night, 40 degrees. And looking ahead to Friday, partly cloudy and a high of 54. All Sides with Ann Fisher, hosted by Mike Thompson, continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher, but I'm not Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann. This hour we're speaking with Carol Coletta, President and CEO of CEO for Cities and host of the syndicated public radio show Smart City. Carol, you mentioned the walk score, and you can get your walk score for your house or your office at walkscore.com, correct? Yeah, that's walkscore, all one word, .com.
That's right.
You can type in your address. I typed in the address of our office, the wonderful Fawcett Center for Tomorrow on the Ohio State campus, and our walk score is a 63. How does that rank?
Well, 63 is good. It's not as good as my house. My house is 99.
Mm-hmm. I could have guessed that, yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. I didn't. Of course, I bought my condo much sooner, but then mm-hmm. I went back and looked at the walk score of a home I still own in Memphis, which is which I bought 35 years ago, so a long, long time ago. And it has a walk score above 95. So mm-hmm. I thought, well, okay, I was ahead of the trend.
But this looks at, you know, how close you are to restaurants, how close you are to mass transit, how close you are to a bookstore, a movie theater, you know, shopping. That so the closer you are to those things, you know,
the higher
the walk score.
In fact, they just added transit in the last couple of weeks. That's mm-hmm. a new addition to walkscore.com. Mm-hmm.
I did a walk score for another address, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and they get a he gets a 99.
Well, you know what? It probably does him absolutely no good. Well, I don't think the president walks anywhere.
He's a quarter of a mile from a Borders bookstore.
Yeah, I know it well.
Caribou Coffee.
That's right.
Quarter of a mile away. Now, I think the Fawcett Center, you know, this is done by Google Analytics or mapping or whatever, some kind of program. It's unfair in that the closest restaurant at the Fawcett Center is Oxley's, which is in the building. So that's not really fair. Not many houses have a restaurant in their building.
Oh, wait a minute now. A lot of condos
that's
do.
That's true. You're right. That's part of the whole mixed-use, high density.
Exactly.
All right. 292-8513 if you'd like to speak with Carol Coletta. We're talking about new urbanism and the changing faces of suburbs. So let's go to Mark. Mark, you're on the air.
Good morning. And I've got a question for Carol, and I'll give a real brief example of the question. It has to do with what this new urbanism, whether in suburban areas or reviving the core areas of major metropolitan areas, can do to upgrade not only in reality but the perception of security for people who sometimes have fear of different situations. And I guess as an example, I would give the metropolitan Tokyo area in Japan. Though it has many millions of people, it's broken down into thousands of very distinct, tightly organized communities, which maybe gives them a lot better control on security issues. The people in the areas know their areas, what's right and what's wrong. And in some of the areas of the British Isles and Europe, they don't have a lot of the suburban, or even I guess you would call it rural sprawl, where you have thousands of isolated homes scattered all over farm areas with no connection to each other, but they tend to have very tightly organized, urban-styled villages and towns and communities that are defensible and security-conscious and give those basic services that you need that are within walking distance. And
okay, Mark.
I sort of wondered on that theme of what you can do for security. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Carol?
Well, I think you began to point to a lot of truths about security. I think that if you have more eyes on the street, that is, you know, more people facing the street, more people on the street. I mean, you certainly have a greater opportunity for security, for someone seeing something that is wrong and reporting it. On the other hand, I don't want to, you know, I think we can't be cavalier about that because we have to remember that, you know, many high-density housing developments for low-income people in America, you know, have been torn down, many in Chicago, for reasons that, you know, were unsafe. So I think compact development is not by any means a cure-all, but I think with the right mix of incomes, with the right mix of uses, with the right design and public spaces, then I think that we certainly can feel more secure in, I mean, quite frankly, it is more defensible space when it's more compact, you know, more compact development.
Mm-hmm. 292-8513. If you have a question or a comment about this new urbanism, higher density housing in the suburbs, which traditionally have put the emphasis on lower density housing. Some of the challenges, Carol, let's start with the big one, traffic. I mean, a lot of people have moved to the suburbs to get away from the bustling streets. And when you have higher density housing and higher density businesses, you're going to have more cars.
You're not necessarily. Let me tell you why. I mean, the fact is, if you are well served by transit, and transit serves compact development much better than it does low density development, then you really have to take fewer car trips. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I think go to any suburban school at 8 o'clock in the morning during drop off, or 3 o'clock in the afternoon when people are being picked up. I mean, the fact is, you've got these unbelievable congestion, and so I think that one of the benefits of compact development not only is its convenience and propensity towards security. I think the other one, is that you begin to reduce the need for cars, and cars are what create congestion.
I can see that on the coast or in bigger cities like Chicago, where you have mass transit. Here in Columbus, our mass transit system isn't as advanced, and it's a chicken and egg thing. How do you get these walkable neighborhoods developed without the mass transit? And, of course, the mass transit is likely not going to follow until those developments are there.
Well, it's an interesting conundrum you're describing, and I think that everyone today recognizes, I mean, progressive, you certainly see it at HUD and at the Department of Transportation today, is they understand that you really can't talk transportation without also talking land use and housing. So you're now beginning to see those two things considered together. You're absolutely right. The worst thing in the world is to try to develop a transit system without the accompanying land use to support it. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to do, for the reasons you talked about, you don't want to do the compact land use without supporting it with appropriate transportation. And that includes not just, you know, not just transit, but certainly biking and walking and so forth. So it is, you know, there is a dance to be danced there. It's not absolutely straightforward, but you're seeing, I mean, even places, it's very interesting, for instance, in Phoenix, Mesa, and Tempe, which those communities recently invested in a regional transit system, a regional rail system, actually, and it is now creating development opportunities because people want to be near it for the convenience. So, you know, these things have to be considered together. You're absolutely right.
It's a tough sell. I mean, in Columbus here, rail transit and streetcars and light rail has been a very difficult sell because, frankly, we love our cars.
Well, America loves its cars.
So how do we get us out of this habit? How do we break us
from
that habit?
You know, Columbus is not different from any place else. What I would say is this. First of all, transit is not just rail. That's important. You know, quite frankly, buses work just fine, and there are lots of new ideas for making buses not only more compatible with the environment, but also work better from a customer standpoint. So there are some really cool things happening with buses today, and you never want to overlook them. But back to your major point, I think there's something happening generationally, and we see this in our own research, where there's a much higher value placed on transit among a younger generation. And I think that's, again, it's a value shift. It's just like there's a higher value placed on sustainability in a younger generation, on recycling, on experiences. So you're seeing a generational shift, and I think that communities that don't get this are really going to be left behind communities that do. Now, I'm not saying the shift is easy, but you know the notion about being in love with your car, yeah, you're in love with your car as long as your car can sort of proceed without stopping from your your origination point to your destination. If you had to make the trip I made, yes, normally I always go to O'Hare from downtown Chicago, by train. It's just simply the easiest way, but I thought, I've got to go to a little bit different destination at O'Hare, so I'll get my husband to get the zip car next door in the garage, and I'll get him to drive me. That was the worst decision I'd made all week because, you know, we got stuck in horrible traffic, and that's more today. In many cities, that's more the norm than the exception.
We're speaking with Carol Coletta. She is the host of the syndicated public radio show Smart City. We're talking about new urbanism, the changing faces of suburbs here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann this morning. It's more of a risk. It's more expensive for businesses to locate, say, in old Dublin than it is to just build a new strip mall next to the subdivision out where the cornfields are. How do you convince the businesses to buy into this?
I think there's less convincing you have to do today than we've had to do in the last 50, 60 years, and let me tell you why. It turns out that business doesn't operate without talent. So the question is, where does talent want to be? And I think that's one of the reasons you're beginning to see some big shifts going on by business and location decisions, because they need to be where people want to work, the kind of people they need really at the top level of their firms to power their businesses, and particularly the young talent they're trying to attract. So, you know, increasingly people are not interested in working in environments where they have to be in the same building all day long. If they want to go out to lunch, they have to get in a car. They're sort of uninspired. I mean, if you listen to all the research that's being done on the future of work, you'll see that. I mean, why do you think every Starbucks is crowded with people with computers? Mm-hmm. It's like people want to be in the company of strangers to do their work. They're looking for inspiration. And so I think that actually that's beginning to shift as well.
292-8513 if you'd like to speak with us. We're talking about new urbanism. Or you can send an email. Our email address is allsides@wosu.org. Carol Coletta, let's talk about this sustainability. Are the days of building a strip mall, you know, basically sucking it dry for 20 years and then leaving that parcel for somebody else, are those days over in being replaced by building nicer buildings in these urban areas, in suburbs?
Well, I think certainly that you can see what's happening. I mean, nobody's building a strip mall today. Nobody's building a mall of any kind because it's, you know, this economy. Mm-hmm. And we're going to end up, we clearly were overstored in America. We have too many stores. We have too much retail square footage, and that's going to shrink, period. So I think while, you know, and that's a sea change, right? So as long as that sea change is occurring, I think you're going to see a lot of rethinking going on. I mean, the enclosed, everything from, is the enclosed shopping mall, does that really make sense? I mean, we were already rethinking that. You've got a lot of dead malls. And now I think that is certainly going to extend to, you know, are we building, you know, what are we building for? I think part of the problem is sort of communities, the nature of development and the ways in which community allowed development to occur. It was like, well, it's all disposable, you know, mm-hmm. we're not going to be here for long, and we're not going to be here forever, so let's not build for forever. And, you know, that's been a very different attitude than, you know, the one we had in an earlier time. And I think now we're beginning to see that disposability is, you know, we can't afford it any longer.
We're learning from cities that are reusing. I look at the neighborhoods here in Columbus, Short North, which is just north of downtown, where these buildings, these shops along High Street, the main street that runs north-south through Columbus, you know, they've gone from being, you know, in some cases manufacturing facilities way back to restaurants, to art galleries, back to restaurants, to a clothing shop. We're reusing that space, but
yeah.
You don't see that with the City Center Mall, which is now a pile of rubble in downtown Columbus.
Yeah, it's a sad thing. I mean, what else are you going to do with an enclosed mall? I mean, or, you know, some of the ill-advised spaces we built over the last 30, 40 years. I mean, it's a shame. We all regret it. But if we don't learn from it, shame on us.
Putting the hat on of a City of Columbus planner who saw folks leave the city over the past 50 years for the suburbs, and then now recently they're developing and revitalizing neighborhoods like the Short North here in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And now the suburbs want a piece of that action too. Is it fair for suburbs to try to, you know, like steal this part of the city development?
Well, I don't think it's stealing. I mean, I think what you're seeing is that any place that is smart enough to, you know, make itself more appealing is, I mean, I don't think that's a mm-hmm. win-lose proposition. I don't think that's a zero-sum game. I think that, you know, when you look at a region like Columbus, a metropolitan region, what you want is the same thing that's driving some of what we've just been talking about. You want people to have options. You want them to have lots of them. Everybody's not going to want to live in Short North, right?
Mm-hmm.
But some people will, and more people will than have in the past as it remakes itself. On the other hand, some people are going to want a suburban option, but they're going to want a suburban option that's different than the one they've had in the past because their lives are changing, demographics are changing. So I think providing both options makes the region stronger.
How different is this than over the – I mean, you're looking at the long view, you know, over centuries. How different is this trend, the sort of looking for higher density developments in suburbs. How different is that? Is what's happened to cities over the years and over the decades and even centuries? I mean, at one point there weren't any cities; it was all farmland, and then cities grew and then became grew outward, and then as the land became more and more valued, cities went up and things like that. Is this part of just the natural progression of cities?
It's part of the natural response to technology. And I think that what's happening is it's a response to technology. It's a response to the economy. It's a response to continuing growth in educational attainment. So, you put all of those things together, and it's a response to demographics, smaller families, later family formation, in many cases extreme, later family formation, households of different size, different compositions of households, many households without children.
Mm-hmm.
So, all of those things combine to create a different response on the part of development. You have to do different things to be successful. And so I agree with your point is that, there's nothing terribly magical or different about this. I agree with you. It is rather a natural progression that we're going through. And the key thing is, I think not to resist it, but to adapt to it, because the good news in this case is that it really does make for a more comfortable, healthier, more prosperous lifestyle.
Okay. Carol Coletta. She is president and CEO of CEO for Cities and host of the syndicated public radio show Smart City. Thank you, Carol, for joining us here on All Sides.
Thanks so much.
When we come back, we'll speak with David Dixon. He's an urban design consultant who is helping the city of Dublin develop its Bridge Street corridor, which is an illustration of this so-called new urbanism. That's when All Sides continues on WOSU.
On the next Fresh Air, we celebrate the centennial of the birth of songwriter Johnny Mercer with a concert featuring singer Rebecca Kilgore and pianist Dave Frischberg. Join us.
Something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta give. And when an irrepressible smile such as yours...
That topic and much more on Fresh Air. It begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News, 52 degrees in downtown Columbus. Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to wosu.org/email to sign up for one of WOSU's e-newsletters.
Support for WOSU comes from Broadway Across America, Columbus, and Kappa, presenting the Tony Award-winning musical In the Heights, November 24th through the 29th at the Ohio Theater. Information and tickets at kappa.com or 649-0939.
In the weather forecasts, clouds today and rain later this afternoon, a high of 58, rain showers tonight and a low of 45, cloudy skies for Thursday and a good chance of rain, a high of 55, and the low tomorrow night, 40 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
20 minutes before the hour on WOSU, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher, but I'm not Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann this hour. We're talking about new urbanism. The city of Dublin is remaking its Main Street, if you will. That's Bridge Street and High Street in the historic section of Dublin. That's the area that runs along Route 161 from basically Sawmill Road west to I-270. A man who's helping the city of Dublin study what to do in that area is David Dixon. He's an urban planning consultant with the firm Goody Clancy and Associates. David Dixon, welcome to All Sides.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. David, Dublin is the quintessential upper middle class suburb. It's dissected by an outer belt. It has large office buildings, a shopping mall, some nice golf courses, and subdivision after subdivision. And it has cement ears of corn, Why does it want a new urban area?
Why does it want a new urban area? Actually, one of the things that is remarkable about Dublin, I found fascinating, is that over the years, its leadership has been very aware of changing trends in urban economics, in demographics, and in basically what makes a community competitive. And so it's a community that, as all your listeners know, has grown remarkably fast. And it's grown remarkably fast around a remarkably successful formula of golf course communities and Class A office parks that are beautifully landscaped. And those were what the marketplace sought for several decades. Starting in the late 1990s, as demographics changed and the economies of cities began to change, new preferences have come to the fore. Today, the ability to get out and walk, to run into people, to have a wide range of housing choices, to be able to walk to work, to live in what younger people often, younger than me, often refer to as social places, is very important. And Dublin is moving ahead and creating, I'll call it, a much more social place.
It had the sort of the seeds of that with the, I mean, Dublin really before this area grew, before Central Ohio really started to grow, was really kind of a very sleepy farm town. But it did have an historic core of a few buildings right there along the river. So that's where it's building off of.
It's building off of it. And I find it also fascinating. I've worked in Dublin not terribly often, but on and off probably over the last 10 or 12 years. And what I found striking is how much more people in Dublin value historic Dublin than when I first arrived in Dublin. They cared about it and they talked about it and they wanted to preserve it. But it is fascinating to me how important it is to many people as a place to go and walk around and be able to shop at a store owned by its operator and eat in cool and unique restaurants and things like that.
I know you're in the study phase now. You're still analyzing the market and looking at what might lie ahead. But you know, based on your early information and what the city of Dublin officials want, what is your vision for that? I mean, I think people are pretty familiar with that stretch of 161 up in the northwest section of the Outer Belt. What will that look like in 10, 15 years?
Well, I hope what it will look like. And I want to also indicate this is not just an urban design-driven vision. This is very much a market-driven vision. In place of a couple of older shopping centers and large sort of underutilized sites with lots of asphalt parking, there'll be a series of wonderful walkable tree-lined streets lined with shops with lofts above. There'll be new public parks that everyone can enjoy. There will be a development that doesn't overshadow but comes up more closely to the river and possibly a wonderful pedestrian bridge across the river, maybe even with a place in the middle of the bridge where you can just pause and just enjoy nature at its best, stroll across and be in historic Dublin, maybe stroll a little further and find some more lofts and shops, and maybe, in fact, you'll be able to live. In fact, many people will be able to live not only within walking distance of historic Dublin, but if they work at OCLC or some of the other employers in the area, walk to work. And I heard a little bit of Carol's comments at the end, and one point I think she made that was very important is that there are going to be lots of people and increasing numbers of people who are going to want to live in the city of Columbus. There will be also people who would like a somewhat more suburban life, but still to be able to walk to work and walk to shop and walk to a cool cafe.
We're speaking with David Dixon. He's an urban design consultant helping the city of Dublin remake its Bridge Street corridor, this sort of new urbanism theory that many suburbs are looking at around Central Ohio and around the country. What's the biggest challenge, David, to making that all happen?
Biggest challenge? That's a really good question. I think the biggest challenge is the fact that all of us know the world in which we have lived. We know our own experience. We are obviously less aware of change and what it might bring. And I think one terrific thing about people who live in Dublin is that they've come out in large numbers to public meetings. They ask questions constantly, but it's all about education. It's about helping people understand how to preserve what they love, what they've embraced over their lives, and you know why they came to a place like Dublin, and then be part of authoring the changes that will continue to make Dublin even more responsive to what they want in life, but also make it more inviting to the next generation of residents. And change doesn't come easily to any of us, and I'm right on that list with everybody else, but with the right kind of community education and the right chance to really listen to people and translate their own aspirations into a plan, I think we can all embrace change, and I think that's what Dublin is somewhat very courageously stepping forward and doing.
Let's talk about some practical things. Say I own a gas station right in the heart of this district,
yes.
And it makes me a lot of money. It's right off the highway. How do you convince me to move it so you can build a mixed-use development there that might be five stories tall, that might be better for the community, but, you know, that's my gold mine?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we can't just ask you to be nice. That's not fair. So you've used the term new urbanism, and I'd say what Dublin is doing is certainly new urbanist in spirit, but it is very much and it's very much market-driven, I'll call it new urbanism, and that's because actually what the market wants is a very walkable, lively, people-centered environment. All right. That said, you mentioned the five-story building that would go on that gas station. That gas station will only leave if there is an economic incentive for it to move. I'd say move, not leave, but move. Mm-hmm. Now, it just so happens that because there is very strong market demand for the kinds of housing I talked about, for these lively, walkable streets with small retailers and great restaurants, that they're more valuable now than they used to be. So whereas they probably couldn't compete with that gas station economically, certainly 15 years ago, probably even 5 years ago, they can today, which means we have an opportunity today that we haven't had, I'm going to say, since probably before the recession, the Great Depression, mm-hmm. the other Great Depression, to recast our communities, because suddenly and very recently we placed much more value on mixed-use walkable environments, so it is easier for them to replace single-use environments.
So you can make me an offer I couldn't refuse, basically.
I could, and I couldn't have done it 10 years ago, maybe not even 5 years ago.
We're speaking with David Dixon. He's an urban design consultant helping the city of Dublin as it looks to redevelop its Bridge Street corridor, trying to make it into a main street with mixed uses of housing, whether it be condos or apartments, and also some retail and some office space. This new urbanism that many suburbs are moving towards here in Central Ohio and around the country. Retail, you know, I think a fear that a lot of people have is that retail tends to be kind of faddish. You know, a new strip mall opens up, but it's not new stores. It steals the grocery store from across the street who moves over to the new place across the newer place and leaves behind the big empty box.
Yeah.
Is that a challenge as well? What are the chances of this happening in this type of scenario?
That's a terrific question. I'm going to draw a distinction, to be a little bit direct here, between,
sure.
for instance, what Dublin is trying to do and what the development at Easton, which was certainly very much a landmark at its time, very much a bold endeavor. What Dublin is attempting to do is create not a mixed-use development but a mixed-use neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to emphasize this because when you have a community in which the residents support much of the retail that's there, they'll never support all but much of it, that retail is much more stable. It is much easier for small and independent entrepreneurs to make a go of it and succeed. It is much easier for a restaurant to build a clientele and go through the initial tough years and have a sustainable future. Because much more of it is walkable, pedestrian based. It is people who live within a 10 or 15 minute walk and provide not 100%, but maybe 30, 40, or 50% of the business. When you have automobile oriented retail, any shopping mall, most retail outside of urban cores or old Dublin, you have a phenomenon which people very readily can choose the newest fad, and they do. They just drive in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of retail is, frankly, constantly, sort of eating itself. Each new era sort of devours the market that supported maybe two eras ago. One advantage to mixed-use development is that it provides stability over time, and frankly, it's a much better investment for a community in terms of any public investment because it is a long-term investment. It's not an investment that will only last through the duration of one fad.
So it's more sustainable.
It is more sustainable from many perspectives, mm-hmm. Yes, very good term.
Another practical thing is traffic. I mean, that looking at this stretch of Dublin and a lot of other cities in Central Ireland have this. They have a traffic flows pretty well through the main area, and that's what people want. They want to get home from the office fairly quickly to their homes in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. Can you have speeding traffic go by a pedestrian-friendly zone?
That's a great question, and yes, and there are a couple of ways to look at this. Sawmill Parkway will probably be just as fast as it ever has been if you turn off of the Sawmill Parkway into this sort of redeveloped walkable world I'm talking about. The streets will be pedestrian-friendly. Cars will move through, but cars and people coexist very well on streets when they're not driving too. People aren't driving too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to park at the curb, along the side of a street, makes a street actually much more pedestrian-friendly because then people aren't walking next to a stream of fast-moving cars. They're walking next to parked cars that are not moving and provide a buffer between them and moving traffic.
That means taking a four-lane highway and shrinking it down to two, maybe two with a median or a turn lane in the middle.
Yeah.
How hard is that?
Yeah. That's very hard if you have a lot of traffic on that road. But wherever you're building a new street, for instance, that intersects it at a right angle and connects into a walkable environment, all those new streets can certainly and should certainly have curbside parking. And frankly, where you find a major street that is underutilized and has more lanes than it needs, there's a new term called road diet, which means you put curbside parking along there and maybe some more landscaping to take advantage of wasted pavement, put it to better use.
We saw that in downtown Columbus, Gay Street downtown. They put a nice island right down the middle, and we lost traffic flow there, but I don't think people are complaining.
I don't think they do, and there are lots of ways to move around downtown Columbus.
Uh-huh. But it is difficult to take Bridge Street there and shrink that down to two lanes. So that'd be a hard sell.
You mean past Stark Dublin Village?
Yeah.
Well, I would not call it a hard sell. I would call it a careful study. and I'm being very serious because it gets back to education and to involving people. It's a decision that the community should make based on actual real data about how do people move through this area? Where are they trying to get to? Would people prefer to have more walkable sidewalks in historic Dublin, or would they prefer to have faster moving traffic? What are the alternative routes that through traffic could take that might, for example, remove this as a conflict or a problem? And by the time you add a lot of other new streets into this area, what are the other choices that people will naturally take? And I truly believe it's when there is a possible goal in sight, and that would be one of them, it's never worth giving up without doing a study and finding out what you can do and how to do it. And sometimes the answer is no. Often it's something you never expected when you started.
292-8513. Just a couple of minutes left if you'd like to speak with David Dixon here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're speaking about this new urbanism and efforts to recreate suburbs, or at least recreate parts of suburbs to give it a more of an urban feel, walkable stores, walkable businesses, sort of like a short north out in Dublin, basically, is what they're trying to do up there. 292-8513. David, how do you preserve the historic charm of these areas, whether it be in Upper Arlington or Dublin or Westerville, and create the new amenities that people and businesses want these days?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Well, first of all, you recognize just how valuable that is. Not only how good and right is that historic charm, but how valuable is it in terms of attracting people to invest and develop not in its midst, but nearby. So I believe to my core that historic Dublin is a wonderful place where historic preservation should govern, preserving or preserving the traditional character that's there, making it more walkable, encouraging small businesses to flourish there. that is actually more possible if, let's say, a 5 or 10 minute walk away, more people are living in new lofts who can come and patronize the businesses there and don't need to drive. One of the very interesting phenomena about mixed-use development is it generates much less traffic, in many cases half as much traffic per household, half as much traffic per business, because people can walk to their destinations. More housing near, not in the midst of, but near historic Tubman Village, in some ways is a captive market that will help businesses thrive and attract more businesses without attracting parking or attracting cars or traffic and creating challenges like how to weave more parking into the sort of delicate historic fabric of historic Dublin.
Just a couple of minutes left, but I want to take a call from Jerry. Jerry, go ahead.
I don't think there's any of old historic Dublin left anymore. But I was wondering how you're going to keep this from turning out the same way Anna did, with a huge white elephant in their downtown that they can't get rid of and they can't use.
This is the Gahanna?
Yeah, I know. Gahanna, yes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think it's too early to judge anything of white elephant. We're in the midst of the worst real estate recession that we've experienced in many decades. One of the things that really strikes me, we work with a really terrific housing market analyst, a woman named Lori Vogt, who's actually done a housing market study for this area, and this would be somewhat true of Gahanna. I don't know the details there, but that the housing market is particularly for urban walkable, more urban walkable, mixed-use development, the kind of things we're talking about, that is actually building. It's like a dam holding back a reservoir. When credit flows and people are more confident, there should be a lot of demand for developments that have had a very difficult time. That said, we certainly, and everyone, I think Dublin certainly values design and appropriate scale and character very highly, and it's going to be very important to develop design guidelines that are just as important as market studies that define the character of this area and really create appropriate transitions, more than anything to, I'll call it, traditional Dublin, if not historic Dublin center.
David, that's why it's that key. You keep talking about market-driven because, you know, city center, the downtown mall here in downtown Columbus, years ago was the cure-all. Now it's a pile of rubble. You have to. Yeah. The market has to dictate this.
Yes, and we did a market study that from somebody who has just been right again and again and again, and really a national expert on changing and emerging housing markets, who basically identified demand for roughly 1,500 housing units of the kind we've been talking about in this area. One advantage of a housing market, basing development around housing as opposed to retail, is the I'll use your word. It's a much more sustainable market. It lasts much longer. It's a market that tends to reinforce itself as opposed to outcompete itself over time.
Okay, David Dixon. He is an urban planner, urban design consultant. He is helping the city of Dublin plan its new urban district along Bridge Street 161, trying to remake at least that part of Dublin to make it look more like an urban neighborhood. Thank you, David, for joining us here on All Sides.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening. Ann Fisher will be back tomorrow. I'm Mike Thompson. This has been All Sides on listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.